From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. 1 week after the Charlottesville riot, 2 days before the 2017 solar eclipse, a group of young Catholics sit in a Wyoming backyard and consider this moment in American conservatism.
Plato predicted Trump.
No Trump, please, no Trump.
Trump is Plato's shadow-bleached rich man, hung with superfluous fat, sitting in helpless confusion.
Trump is a golem molded from the clay of mass media, and he's come to save us all.
Damn!
And even if he himself is confused, he has the ability to spit out digestible sound bites rooted in the decades of the work of the most brilliant conservative think tanks in the country. He's Gash's barf bag, and I pray for his soul.
Well, that is a scene from Will Arbery's new play, Heroes of the Fourth Turning, and it is by no means knee-jerk anti-Trumpism. Arbery has written an honest, insightful inquiry into the myriad views of American conservative Catholics. Their big questions about good versus evil, about spiritual war, about service to a political end versus service to God. There's no liberal foil in this play, but no blind faith acceptance either. Instead, Arbery's knowing pen. He is the only son in a family of seven sisters whose parents work at a Catholic college, much like the one he describes in the play. So this hour on Point, Catholicism and conservatism on stage in Heroes of the Fourth Turning. And you can join us. Have these big questions been percolating in your mind, in the mind of conservative circles that you might be part of? Can the arts be a balm, a gathering place for a divided nation? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, Will Arbery joins us today from New York. He is the playwright behind Heroes of the Fourth Turning. It's now at the Off-Broadway Theater of Playwrights Horizons. Will Arbery, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's really great to have you. So first of all, there are many folks listening who haven't made it to New York, won't be able to actually see it, the play on stage here. You want to give us a little bit of a synopsis of what Heroes of the Fourth Turning is all about?
Sure. The play takes place, as you described, in August 2017, a week after the Charlottesville riots, 2 days before the solar eclipse that everyone in the nation sort of gathered to watch. It's also the day after Bannon left the White House. The play takes place in the backyard of one of the alumni of a small Catholic Great Books classical curriculum school there that combines wilderness training with this sort of intensely philosophical, theological education rooted in Western great books. And two alumni have returned to see the inauguration of their favorite professor, who's the first female president of this tiny school. So she's just been inaugurated. Teresa's coming from New York, where she works for a Breitbart-like publication there. Kevin's coming from Oklahoma, where he writes for a Catholic textbook company and feels generally lost in his life. And then Justin is the person whose backyard it is, and he's also a graduate, and he now runs the horsemanship program at the school. And the final young character is Emily, who's the professor's daughter. And she is living with her parents in Wyoming because she's chronically ill. And then so they're basically just in the backyard reuniting. Old histories are coming out. They're debating about politics and theology. And they're waiting for Gina to show up to pick up Emily because they want to see her and toast her. And then, you know, down the line, she does show up and this sort of clash of generations happens.
Yeah. And it's what they talk about, right, and how they talk about it, these very differing views from a group of young American conservative Catholics that that people, no matter where they fall on the political spectrum, who've seen and reviewed the play, they call it a really – there seems to be a universal opinion that the play is both a sensitive but really honest exploration of all these differing – views that American conservative Catholics have. Now, what was it, or why did you decide that you wanted to write this play?
Well, there were a lot of reasons. I mean, part of it is just I grew up in this world. I grew up in backyards, quite like the one in the play. Mostly in Texas is where I grew up, but my parents always taught at small schools like this, and there would be, you know, my own sisters or students, undergraduates, graduates, alumni, other professors gathered in the backyard drinking, smoking cigarettes, and just, you know, talking it out and debating and just being exposed to the intellect and the passion and the poetry and the nuance between all of their different beliefs, even though they, you know, all on paper believed roughly the same things. There was so much debate. So part of it was just, I feel like I've had this play in me my whole life, just wanting to capture that feeling of being in a dark backyard with that kind of passionate debate going on. But then, you know, once the election happened in 2016, being a theater maker surrounded by, you know, liberal to progressive theater makers who felt this sort of desperate need to understand, like, who these people are who voted for him. Because, you know, it was a lot more than just than what was being fed to us about these blue collar workers. You know, it was like 60 million people. Like, who are these people? And I said, you know, well, I can give you access to at least five of them. And so I wrote this play really out of a sense of responsibility. And then it became, you know, I made the strong decision to not have a liberal foil in the play or a stand-in for the audience, because I wanted to really present, like, what's more or less like a safe space for these conservatives to hash it out, because that's how I think you can really immerse yourself in that world without, you know, if as soon as a liberal is present, conservatives will become more diplomatic or, you know, they won't go to certain places. So I wanted to depict that almost as an act of, you know, citizenship, and the bond between art making and citizenship is something I've been thinking about lately.
Yeah. Well, I want to play a scene from Heroes of the Fourth Turning here. This is a scene where the characters of Kevin and Gina and Teresa, they're arguing a sense about President Trump here. So you're going to hear Kevin, played by John Drzeski, and Gina, played by Michelle Pach, and Teresa, played by Zoe Winters, really debating about why Catholic conservatives are, quote, lumped in with President Trump.
He's a passing thing, a symptom. He's chemotherapy. I hope he gets impeached before he can recampaign. I'm holding out for Pence.
Amen.
Trump was made possible by the uneducated.
I think some of his advisors are actually really smart.
No, they're not. They're adolescents. They're a symptom.
Adolescent, okay. Symptom, okay.
I love what you're saying, Dr. President. After I voted for Trump, I vomited next to my car.
After I voted for him, I went to confession, and I'm scared of confession.
That's a scene from Heroes of the Fourth Turning. Will, how close are scenes like that? I mean, they're all conjured from your imagination and your creative mind here, but how close are they to actual conversations or debates that you've heard in your life, in your circles?
They're quite close. I mean, you know, of course, context is important in the play and what we've learned about these characters so far. So things become heightened in certain ways, but they're quite close. And a lot of the things that are said in the play are things that people said to me or versions of that. So I really tried to be as accurate as possible, and I showed the play to, you know, some of the people that it was inspired by and people who I knew were more aligned with conservative thinking to make sure that it was accurate, and they sort of gave it their blessing. That was important to me.
So can we talk about one of those folks in particular, Rod Dreher, right? You showed him. First of all, tell us about why he's important to you, why he's important, period. And then why you decided you wanted to show him a copy of the play?
Sure. You know, Rod Dreher runs a website, or he has a blog on a website called The American Conservative. And he has a wide readership, and he's known for these long and passionate posts about the issues of the day and the way that he was a Catholic, but he actually converted to the Orthodox Church, and it's all wrapped up for him in a similar way that it is for these characters, the faith and the politics and wrestling with what's happening in the world and trying to weave it into a coherent vision that makes sense for him. He just sort of lays it all out there. So he's a popular figure. And I was moved by a piece that I read about him in The New Yorker about his book, The Benedict Option, mm-hmm. Which is basically an argument that, it references Saint Benedict and these sort of cloisters of communities essentially believe that the world is not going to integrate them into it. Like the secular world is not going to allow people of faith and their communities to exist. So the best thing to do is to bunker down and look out for each other and close yourself off from the world and let it work itself out and just try to survive. So I was very moved by that, and that theme of like whether to open yourself or close yourself off became a major theme in the play.
So we'll hang on here for just a second, because when we come back, we'll talk about what Dreher wrote about your play, very long and passionate blog post in response to Heroes of the Fourth Turning. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Will Arbery. He is a playwright, performer, and filmmaker, and he's the playwright behind Heroes of the Fourth Turning. It's a play currently on stage off-Broadway in New York about a group of conservative young Catholics in Wyoming who are arguing over everything from God to Donald Trump. Now, Will, before the break, we were talking about Rod Dreher and his response to your play, the conservative, influential conservative Christian blogger and thinker here. I should note that he knows your family, right? He knows your parents, and is even when you were young, he had dinner in your house. He pointed that out in his response. So there's a there's an intimacy there here. He wrote that he thinks that anybody who sees this play cannot walk out of the theater without thinking they have to change their life in some way. How did you respond to him writing that?
Well, it's complicated. I mean, I think that's a beautiful thing to say, and it reminds me of, you know, Rilke's poem, The Archaic Torso of Apollo, where he beholds this sculpture and just and ends with this feeling of, like, I must change my life. And I think that's a beautiful response to have to a work of art. Of course, you know, where it gets tricky and where I hope that the conversation continues to flourish is, like, how will you change your life? Like, what exactly is it about this that makes you want to change? You know, because there's been a huge variety of response to this play. And you know, a lot of progressives who see it feel like it's almost like a access into a world that will equip them to better fight that world, whereas conservatives who see it maybe sometimes feel like they see themselves in certain characters and feel like, oh, you know, I need to be more simple and trusting in my faith, or And this is the one that worries me, that they see the character of Teresa and think, yes, I need to be more prepared for the coming war and how to defeat, you know, secular progressives. So if that's the change that's being talked about, then, you know, I want there to be a conversation about that. And I, you know, the real hope is that progressives and conservatives and liberals and, you know, Republicans are debating each other. And right now, a lot of the conversation is still contained within the echo chambers. So we'll see if it can break out of that a little bit.
Well, since you mentioned the character of Teresa, let's listen to a little bit more from a recording of the play. And first of all, just to remind folks, Teresa is the character. She's, you know, she lives in Brooklyn. She's the young Bannonite, right, essentially. And in fact, even the title of the play, she explains sort of what it is. And so let's listen. Here, Teresa, played by Zoe Winters, explains the fourth turning. This is a theory developed by William Strauss and Neil Howe. And she explains that history occurs in generational cycles, right? That high is the time of institutional security, that being the 1950s in the most recent cycle. Next comes the awakening, when institutions are questioned, such as they were in the 60s and 70s. And then comes the unraveling.
Unraveling is weird. It's like we break into different camps. Institutions aren't trusted anymore, and there's a ton of emphasis on personal freedom, but more like license. Things get a little decadent. People go off into their different camps. Culture wars, 80s, 90s. Then comes crisis. That's the fourth turning. It's destruction. It's revolution. It's war. The nation almost doesn't survive. Great example is the Civil War and the economic crisis before that, or the Great Depression into World War II. And it's right now. The national identity crisis caused by Obama. Liberals think it's Trump. It's the fight to save civilization. People start to collectivize and turn against each other. It seems like everything's ending. We're all going to die. No one trusts each other. But the people who do trust each other form crazy bonds. Somehow we get through it. We rise from the ashes and breach back into a high.
That's from Heroes of the Fourth Turning. Will, tell us more about the character of Teresa. She seems to be, I mean, they're all important, but she's important in a particular way. And she also possesses some extreme fragility as well. But tell us about what it was like writing her character.
Yeah. Well, Teresa was sort of inspired by two people, and then a much more general concept. So, like, the two people were, one, a friend of mine who was sort of my childhood best friend, and he was extremely conservative, extremely, you know, into, like, the history of Europe and France and Napoleon. You know, he was just always, like, an Anglophile and a Francophile, and really saw the world in these, like, martial terms. And you know, and then when we were juniors in high school, he came out to me as gay, and the fragility in him and the contradictions and the ways in which that wound sort of fed into his beliefs and that symbiotic relationship. So that was one inspiration. And then also imagining, you know, what my mom would be like if she were a young woman today was also a little bit a part of it too. Like, what would she be responding to? I mean, my mom is such a fierce and strong woman with such a clear eye. So imagining her in this world with the social media, you know, was a fascinating thought experiment. And the other thing that inspired me with Teresa was actually like young progressives today, people who are strident and unapologetic and just have such a clear sense of what's right and what's wrong, and anything that doesn't fall into that category of right is sort of banished. And, you know, people think that she was inspired by Ann Coulter or someone like that, but it was actually more just like that young, youthful energy today in the sort of Twitter sphere. And yeah, she's a sort of mess of contradictions. I mean, she's this deeply conservative young woman who's living in Park Slope in Brooklyn, and who, you know, does cocaine and uses profanity, but also can wax poetically about the virtues of the Virgin Mary and then link them to a broader conversation about the future of Western civilization and then bring it all back to the Virgin Mary and make an amazing joke at the end. She's a very charming and unsettling character who really drives most of the conversation in the play.
Mm. But there are interesting scenes where she comes into direct conflict with Gina, right? The more mature character in the play who's going to become president of this Wyoming college here. I found those scenes very, very interesting, right? Because Gina, she really actually rejects Teresa's approach entirely. Can you tell us about the basis of that conflict?
Yeah, well, they really start arguing, which you did hear in the clip when Gina says that she thinks that Trump's advisors are not smart at all, that they're essentially charlatans. And Teresa, who's a sort of devotee of Steve Bannon, or at least sees a lot of good in his views, sort of picks up on that and challenges Gina on it. Gina ends up almost casually dropping the word racist in reference to Bannon and company. And that's when Teresa snaps into a really intense mode. And she can't believe that Gina's used the word racist. And she essentially starts challenging her mentor on Gina's own history, supporting Barry Goldwater when she was younger, hosting a rally for Pat Buchanan, being a member of the John Birch Society, mm-hmm. and essentially showing Gina the ways in which all of those things, all of those activities and those beliefs are wrapped up in essentially what she gets to is the preservation of white Western civilization. And Gina just finds that abhorrent. The final straw is basically when Teresa says, you know, your single issue, like the issue that it really boils down to, wasn't really being pro-life. It was white Western civilization, which only survives by being pro-life. And Gina just snaps at her and says, that's absurd, you know, and she reveals that she had 8 C-sections. And, you know, after the first, every single doctor told her that each one would kill her. And she did it anyway. And she didn't do that for white Western civilization. She did it for God. And so the ways in which, Catholic motherhood and that sacrifice and that feeling of putting your body on the line is like tied up in this much larger thing about preserving the church and preserving, you know, this civilization that feels like it's constantly under attack. That's really the debate. And Gina simply can't stand Teresa's rhetoric and accuses her of sounding like one of them, meaning like one of the progressives. And it's true that Teresa has adopted a lot of like almost like radically leftist language in the way that she's talking about it. So it's really sort of the centerpiece debate of the play.
And so tell me more, though, about it's sort of Gina's response, as you just outlined, about what Catholic sacrifice is supposed to mean. Mm-hmm. That really sort of, I sat with that for a moment here, because particularly you have a Catholic woman saying this in the character of Emily. There's also this sort of parallel story about her personal pain, her body as well. Mm-hmm. So, just kind of tell me more how what this conversation, what this debate actually means, as Gina puts it forward.
Yeah, growing up in the household that I did with 8 women, and all of these different examples of devotion to this church was, you know, it's sort of like deep in my soul, like the ways in which I write about that, and it often comes out almost instinctively. But one thing that I write about and that I always will probably write about is women who are trapped in and upholding a system that's designed to limit their autonomy. And that's why this play, which is about, conservatives in Wyoming, you might instantly think of that as maybe a male-dominated environment, but this play is entirely female dominated. All the big debates are between women, and for me, that's just true to life. I mean, I think that the demands that are called for by the church and by the pro-life movement, which is such a driving force behind the election of Donald Trump and sort of where we are in politics now, all of those play out sort of in women's bodies and in the decisions that they have to make and the ways in which they rationalize or spiritualize or just accept or deny those those decisions.
Well, if I can, Will, I just want to go to a caller here. We're talking this hour with Will Arbery. His new play is Heroes of the Fourth Turning. It's currently being performed at the Playwrights Horizons off-Broadway in New York, a remarkable play that's been very well received by critics really on all sides of the political spectrum and from various points of view on the religious spectrum as well. Let's go to Anthony, who's calling from Columbus, Ohio. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, go ahead.
I'm a college professor and I teach U.S. history, and just listening to the clips that you've played from the play, in which the characters express their understanding of how history moves forward in these turnings from first to second to third to fourth. I feel like there's a problem with understanding history that way, that it doesn't work nearly that neatly. But at the same time, I understand that what the play is trying to do is to reflect the understanding of history of its characters. What I would like to ask your guest is what he thinks about the understanding of history that the play puts forward.
Well, Anthony, thank you for your call. Will, would you like to respond?
Sure. I mean, I understand that, you know, out of context, something like this might make it seem like the play is making an argument for what's being said. And I mean, the fact of the matter is that as the playwright, I don't think it necessarily matters what I think about the view of history. And I think it would be a disservice to those who still want to see the play or read the play to have too much of an understanding of like what my like actual views or my actual agenda is. I want the play to be removed from that idea of agenda and just encounter these characters on their own terms. So Teresa is a character who really believes in this theory. She believes in it because Bannon did, and Pat Buchanan before him, I need to sort of leave it at that, partly out of a belief because the theater space is a space where we can gather and really experience the beautiful terror of each other in a relatively safe place, and really like behold each other and look at each other. And to impose too much of my own views upon that, I think would be a disservice to this particular project.
Yeah. Have you watched the play being performed from the audience? Have you sat in the audience while you've seen performances?
Oh, yeah. Many, many times.
And what is the energy like in the audience?
It's unlike anything I've ever experienced in the theater, and I think it is for a lot of people who see it. You become very aware of the people around you, and I've heard this from other people too, that like you're very aware of your own brain and this sort of back and forth between like wanting to debate the characters and feeling so deeply for them, and then you're very aware of that same thing happening amongst other people, and people react at the strangest things and in entirely different ways, because the play is talking about issues that are so much at the heart of the fissure in America. And so it's bizarre. Like some people are laughing at times when other people are crying. It's it's sort of this truly like democratic experience, but in the dark, and you can't really see anyone. You can just hear them around you and feel their energies. It's exciting. It's scary.
Well, Will Aubrey, stand by here for just a second. We're talking about Will's new play, Heroes of the Fourth Turning. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Will Aubrey. His play, Heroes of the Fourth Turning, is currently being performed off-Broadway in New York at the Playwrights Horizons. It's a play about a group of conservative Catholic millennials in Wyoming arguing over everything from God to a spiritual war to Donald Trump. They present a myriad of voices and points of view within Catholic conservatism, and they reflect a world that Will Aubrey himself knows well because he grew up in that world. Will, I want to play another moment from the play, and we're going to hear Gina, the character of Gina, describing her view of President Trump, and then Teresa really takes offense at what Gina says. So let's listen.
There's danger from all sides. Yep. Liberty is being attacked by both sides, and it's tragic to see. Polarities make way for a tyrant. But tyrants can be productive. We'll get through it.
Did you just call him a tyrant?
Oh, listen. FDR was the closest thing we had to a true dictator. He altered the shape of America in a debilitating way. He started this pervasive entitlement mentality. A far more necessary and dangerous quality of a dictator is skill as an administrator and a bureaucrat, which Trump does not possess.
Right, he's not a tyrant. He's strong because it's war. America's at war. We're at war.
Will, talk to me more about the concept of America being at war and how it plays out amongst these characters. Because I don't think that I didn't read any of the characters as thinking that this is a nation at spiritual peace right now, but they all seem to have different views of exactly what the conflict is and how it ought to be resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think to answer that, it reminds me of an earlier part in the play when Teresa is debating Emily, who is the sick daughter of the president. And she had spent time working at a pro-life women's advocacy organization in Chicago that basically, you know, helped pregnant women, homeless women, refugees, and tried to help them choose life. But in the process of that, Emily learned a lot about how hard these decisions actually are. And Teresa and Emily have this long debate about whether Emily's friend, who works at Planned Parenthood, can possibly be a good person. And Teresa argues that, you know, she can't. She's not a good person, that she is doing evil in the world and that she must be evil. And Emily argues that she is a good person. And the ways in which their debate progresses, I think, gets to the heart of the question you asked, because Teresa ends up comparing, you know, the abortion situation in America to the Holocaust, and Emily pushes against that, and Teresa sort of makes the case for it being a Holocaust and a genocide. And Emily says, okay, well, let's say it is a Holocaust, and let's say the the babies are the Holocaust victims. What does that make them mothers? And Teresa starts to answer, and Emily says, do not say they're the Nazis, just don't. And I think that that exchange really really gets at the heart of that question. It's a debate. It's a war. Teresa sees it as a war on American soil, and a sort of at the moment, sort of like a more insidious war that's happening sort of all around us and invisibly and behind closed doors. But she believes that soon it will become a more all-out war between, essentially between pro-life religious people and you know, the secular world. Or maybe it'll be an entirely different, you know, kind of war, but she really believes that it's coming. And this idea of goodness and people who are making the world, in her mind, an evil and worse place, that's sort of at the center of it.
Mm. I don't know if you're one of those playwrights who reads reviews of their work. Have you read all the varying reviews?
I've read more of them than I should have.
Fair enough.
Because the play is sort of like there's a social experiment element to it, so I sort of have to see how the experiment's going. Yeah.
Well, I wonder, in reading a whole variety of reviews and reactions to the play, I'm wondering if you detected quite a clear difference between the reviews that conservative Catholics have written versus what, you know, other reviewers have written.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, I obviously did, so I'm just wondering. But I'm wondering if the difference that I felt is the same one that you felt.
Well, I mean, I think the main difference that I've noticed is simply that, for non-conservative critics who are coming to see it, a lot of their experience has to do with hearing these views go uncontested and just having to sit with that and sit with characters who you come to care about, and sort of the boldness of that experiment and just how rare that is. Mm-hmm. For conservatives, I think something else is happening. I mean, a lot of the views, maybe not all of them, but for some people who see it, maybe all of the views that are presented, at least by one character, seem accurate and seem, you know, like the truth or the things that they actually believe. And the people who are debating those views seem like, yeah, people that they've actually debated in their life. So the play becomes much more about, like, well, what is it leaving us with? Is it leaving us with a sort of endorsement or a condemnation? And if it's a condemnation, then where is it? And let's root it out and find it, because it's probably, like, hidden, like a Trojan horse, you know, coded somewhere in the play. Or, you know, like, it's just a whole nother level of experiencing the play. But I'd be so curious to know what your experience of the reviews was.
Well, I read a bunch of the reviews written by conservative Catholics, and I was most taken with the fact that they very much appreciated this sort of honest, non-judgmental exploration about some fundamental tenets or sort of core aspects of conservative Catholicism. For example, several reviewers seem to appreciate that you give voice to this idea of particularity, okay, mm-hmm. which is a concept, I'll be honest with, still don't have much fluidity with. But three or four reviewers talked about how characters spoke about particularity. So what is that, and why is it important for conservative Catholics?
Well, that comes up in the play when the character of Kevin asks Teresa why we have to love the Virgin Mary. What does she have to do with our salvation? And Teresa says, you're afraid of the scandal of the particular. And she references the work of Walter Brueggemann, who basically said that every revelation in the Bible is built on the scandal of the particular, this particular person getting this particular grace. So in Mary's case, it would be, just a lower class, you know, teenager, and who didn't, you know, on the surface didn't have anything particular special or glorious about her. And Teresa basically says to Kevin, like, you know, people like you will always say, what's so special about that person? Why should God choose them? I think that this idea is really at the heart of what they mean by particularity. The scandal of, you know, the idea that, essentially that Catholics or maybe more broadly Christians are chosen, and that theirs is the right faith, and that the way that they live, that the scandal of that particular way of, like, taking the Eucharist and you know, staying open to childbirth and, you know, having as many children as God wants to give you, like, the scandal of these particular things are I don't know, you know, to be honest, it's something that I'm still learning about. It was something that I learned about and was said to me. And I've, you know, I've been a little bit taken aback at the ways in which it seems to be something that is really talked about in these circles. And you even heard about you like it was talked about at, like, the National Conservatism Conference earlier this year in DC, this idea of the particular. Teresa uses it to talk about Trump. Mm-hmm. And the ways in which he's a much more particular person than Hillary Clinton was, who scrubbed herself clean of any particularity. So I think it has a lot to do with the idea of borders, too, on a more national level, the metaphor of, like, borders and being closed off and closing yourself off from essentially, like, you know, globalization and you know, this, like, narcissistic, amorphous, genderless world that they're also afraid of.
Yeah. You know, since you mentioned the president again, all of the characters have very strong views, as we heard earlier in the show, about President Trump. A lot of them are pretty negative. Teresa, who might be the most supportive of the president, still ultimately sees him as sort of a tool an important sort of moment in this overall war that she's obsessed with. But I wonder, there isn't a character in the play who specifically sees President Trump as sort of chosen by God to lead the nation at this moment, which we know, that in some deeply devout circles in America, that is the fundamental belief. And I'm wondering why you didn't have a character who has that sort of less questioning view of the president.
I think it wouldn't be the Catholics that I know wouldn't be so unquestioning. Uh-huh. I think that the general view is that whether he's for good or for bad, in some way that Trump is like a symptom of our times, a sign of our times, and that he, you know, there's basically this, like, fingers crossed feeling, like, you know, that it will be for good. And I think a lot of that had to do with, like, getting the right Supreme Court appointees and that sort of ultimate battle to overturn Roe v. Wade or you know, protect the unborn. and so I think that it really was, like, that was one of the things that interested me most about the play, was sort of that compromise and that sort of deal with the devil in a way. Because, you know, even Teresa, who's the most pro-Trump character in the play, she calls him a golem molded mm-hmm. from the clay of mass media, which is certainly not some sort of, like, divine appointee. But she does say he's come to save us all, which does have a ring of a little bit more divine nature to it. So, yeah, you know, I just think when he was elected, the general feeling was like, gosh, that guy's awful and confusing, and I just hope some good comes out of it.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Yvonne, who's calling from Syracuse, New York. Yvonne, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if the author found any change or adjustment in his own views, having experienced his work from a different perspective, as an audience member, perhaps. This strikes me as a is a play where one would go away changed, and I wonder if he often walks away changed from what he has written himself.
Yvonne, thank you for your call. Will, you want to respond?
Sure. It's an interesting question. I mean, it's in an odd way, that feels sort of like private to me. I feel like a lot of people, their experience of this play is deeply private. Like they'll go off and they'll debate it with their friends who they saw it with, but then it'll stay with them. You know, I get messages from people saying that they couldn't sleep the night after, and there's this feeling of sort of deep, a lingering sort of questioning unease that sets in after seeing this play. And I think that, you know, the short answer is that that's how I live my life. That's the mode in which I live my life. I feel like I'm constantly living on that tightrope walk between, you know, two competing certainties, and I'm existing in that fissure and that uncertain space where things are more unexplainable and primal and eternal and scary. And so that's the place that I live, and the act of sharing a play that I think has that effect for a lot of people. It's not necessarily that it changes me in the moment, but that I sort of feel like I'm always changing and always just sort of trying to stay open to what the world is showing me.
I'm letting you publicly suffer here a little bit.
I did it to myself.
My apologies, but I was just sort of listening to you sort of think through the answer to that question. And I think sort of the way that you arrived at a place which hints at an answer but doesn't really offer it is exactly what we see in the play well. And is that that's the approach that you've taken? But I have 30 seconds left, and I do want to ask you more directly, though. I mean, we're talking about conservative Catholicism, which is the world you grew up in. Is that still core to who you are, the Catholic view, the conservative Catholic view of this world?
Well, it's core to who I am in the sense that, you know, it shaped who I am. And so I'll spend the rest of my life trying to figure out what that means and trying to be of use. You know, I'm an artist, so ultimately I'm going to exist in these more liminal, hard-to-define spaces. But I have found a lot to appreciate in the specificity and strange combination of the holy and the worldly that I was given.
Well, Will Arbery, his new play is Heroes of the Fourth Turning. Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is On Point.